In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. We recently celebrated Alice Cooper's new album, Road, with an Alice Cooper Week here in the Underground Garage. To cap it off, he joined me for our coolest conversations. The tune, Welcome to the Show, that's off the new album. It's the former coolest song in the world. And we'll hear some of that now, followed by my chat with Alice on your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage. Manfred, and we have a very, very special Coolest Conversations happening today. Our chat is a culmination of Alice Cooper Week here in Little Stevens Underground Garage. And our guest of honor is indeed singer, songwriter, and the godfather of shock rock, Alice Cooper. How are you, Alice?
Mighty Manfred, I hope that this Alice Cooper Week doesn't try to get me elected, okay? Because I don't want to be elected.
Yeah, it's true. You're not 18 any longer, you know. Can't have them wild in the streets. Have you been enjoying your Alice Cooper Week?
Oh, yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, it's really nice, you know, to... First of all, I had no idea when I'm 75 I'd be in two touring bands. You know, my own band and then the Hollywood Vampires. So I'm out for like 100 and some shows this year.
Wow. We'll be talking about that and how that ties in to the new album, Road, right? The new album, Road, is out today. It's out today.
Yes.
It's your, if I'm going to help me out here. So what I've read is this is your 22nd solo album as Alice Cooper, and overall 29th to include, you know, the band Alice Cooper. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's right. And the next album's already done after this one. So we're not sliding our feet, you know. We're making albums as every time we get some time off, Ezra and I go in and start recording.
Oh man, well, you know what? Things speed up as we move along, don't they?
I love making albums. I'm never going to be one of those guys that says, well, there's no money in making albums anymore. You make albums for your audience, for your crowd, you know, your fans.
Right.
It's not going to be the same financial thing it used to be in the 70s at all. But, I mean, so what? You're still going to make albums for your fans.
Well, right. Well, most of the songs on Road, either about your live show or life on the road, you recorded it with your touring band. Can you tell us some about the concept for the album and the point of using your touring band in the studio?
Well, you know, every once in a while you get a band that's so good that you want to feature them. You want them to be known, you know, other than just your band.
Yeah.
And so what on this one, I said, what I want to do with these guys you guys all go out and write songs about the road, whatever you, funny, tragic, whatever it is, doesn't matter to me. And then Bob Ezra and I will take them and we'll surgically do what we do and we'll make an album. But the trick is, I want to do all these new songs live in the studio. I don't want to do any, the least amount of, you know, of overdubbing, the better. So we only overdubbed, I think, on five, maybe three or four places on the whole album. That shows off the band. That just shows how good they are to play brand new songs in the studio and do it in two takes.
Oh, wow. So when and where did you record the album?
We did it in Nashville. And that seems to be the place where it's very comfortable to record there. You know, there's not a lot of distraction. If you're in L.A., you've got all these friends around. And same with New York. You have all these friends, a lot of things to distract you. Nashville just is kind of a place where you actually go to work.
Yeah.
And so Nashville seems to be like the place to go. Now, Detroit Stories was done in Detroit. But, you know, that was a whole different thing.
Well, you mentioned, you know, working with longtime producer Bob Ezrin. You guys have worked on and off together since 1971's Love It to Death. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, do you ever finish each other's sentences like an old couple? I mean, that
you know, you're absolutely right. Bob and I are the only two that really understand fully who Alice Cooper is. And we're still discovering things about him, you know, but we'll play a track back and all of a sudden I'll look at him and he'll look at me and we'll go, Alice would never say that, you know, and then we go in and change it, you know, or we'll go, you know, wait a minute, that's way too wimpy for Alice. We've got to beef that up. So we both talk about Alice in the third person. And I think, and it's easy for me then. I don't have to be Alice. I get to play Alice.
How has your relationship with Bob changed over the years? Is there any difference in the dynamic?
Not really. I think we really know we know it's going to be a guitar driven hard rock album.
Yeah.
And we know there's going to be a lot of dark humor on it. And we know that there's going to be it's going to be a storyline. You know, in other words, if it's the road, it's going to be 12 or 13 songs that have their own little story that make up one big story, you know, and a lot of guys that have been on the road will relate with a lot of these songs because some of these songs has happened to every one of them.
Right. Well, so 13 songs on the album and, that you gave the charge to the guys, hey, I want you to write this, the stuff.
Yeah.
How long, what's the timeline here? Were they writing this stuff over the last couple of years or the last few months?
Oh yeah, no, we work quickly. I said a couple of months at the most, you know, and because I don't want anything to get overdone. I hate for a song to be beaten to death before it even gets in the studio. You know, I would rather write the song that morning and then rehearse it that afternoon and record it that night. You know, we did it a little bit. We did a little bit, you know, more time than that, but that's the way you never lose the freshness of that song then.
Right.
You know, you never lose the real attitude of that song. If you do it too many times, it just waters down.
Right. It's beaten. It's hammered down.
It's exactly it. You know, and that's the last thing we want. We want this album to sound really in your face. You know, I mean, like the band's playing live right there.
Well, let's talk about Welcome to the Show. It's our coolest song in the world this week off the new album Road. Now, I'm assuming this is you're opening with a song every night now.
Well, we're opening with I'm Alice.
All right.
And then we go to that song.
Okay.
You know, because, and I think it's kind of funny. People think that I'm talking about me when I'm doing the I'm Alice thing. The I'm Alice thing is Alice Cooper, the character, talking about himself.
Right.
You know, and so I think it's kind of funny that he's explaining who he is after all these years.
Well, hey, my notes say that Tommy Hendrickson plays guitar and contributes keyboards on Welcome to the Show. Is that right?
Yeah, Tommy is like my anchor. Tommy is like, when we started working with Tommy, we started working on the Welcome to My Nightmare 2. You know, that was the first time I met Tommy in the studio. And then after that, I said, man, that guy would be great in my band. Just because he's one of those guys, it's an anchor. If somebody gets lost in a song, they look at Tommy. because they know exactly, he knows exactly where you're going to be in that song.
Well, we spoke with him a couple of months ago, and that was when we were playing a Coolest Song from Johnny Depp, that Johnny Depp and Jeff Beck album.
Oh, yeah.
But now Tommy, he's also in the Hollywood Vampires.
Yeah, I brought him into the Vampires, right. I brought him and Glenn Sobel, my drummer, into the Vampires, because those two guys are the guys that never move. I mean, they know the songs upside down, backwards, sideways. And, you know, when you get Johnny and Joe and I up front doing the show, well, you know, those are the guys that hold the whole thing together. And you need that. You need those guys in a band. Buck Johnson also on keyboards from Aerosmith.
Yeah.
He's another guy that's a solid, solid piece that really, you know, makes everything sound solid.
Well, there are a couple of great songs about playing shows and touring are All Over the World and Rules of the Road. And on the latter, Rules of the Road, you enumerate some of those rules, including the importance of always get the money. Right? I agree 100% with that. Can you remind us of what some other rules of the road are?
Well, one of the funny things about Rules of the Road is here's Alice Cooper telling a young band all the wrong things to do. Every wrong thing you could do, you know, and at the end, I think that the young band is going, yeah, that sounds great. You know, and instead of him saying at the end, and now if you follow these rules, everything's going to be great and you're going to be a huge star. At the end, it says, if you follow these rules, you're going to die.
Because, at 27.
Exactly. I mean, these are all the things that you can't do up there. The running joke with Always Get the Money with Shep Gordon. Shep, my manager for 55 years now.
Yeah.
You know, he said in the old days when you had to, you know, you had to get paid, he says, always get the money. Number two, don't forget to get the money. Number three, always remember not to forget to get the money. That's spoken like a true manager. That's a true manager right there.
Well, the only thing the addendum to that would be, and after you get the money, count it out.
Yeah, count the tickets.
Exactly. Well, so on All Over the World, you know, you got lyrics to the effect of rock will never die as long as we don't disappear and how there's no final show. All right, so I'm thinking about that. And then a friend of mine was telling me about some Rolling Stones documentary, and I'm sorry, I can't remember which one, but in this, they make a point of asking Mick Jagger, when he's like in his 20s, if he can foresee himself performing when he's 60. Without hesitation, he's like, oh, of course, right? Which at the time, I'm sure was quite shocking, as you know, pop careers are generally thought to be dumb by the time.
Sure.
30. So Mick Jagger's now 80. I believe you're what, like 75?
75, yeah.
75. So did you think you'd be rocking this long, or were you already on board with the Jagger mindset that, you know, in your 20s, you'd be rocking until you drop?
I honestly didn't think we would get past 30, you know, because back then it was a constant party. Everybody was loaded all the time. And, you know, you just figured, well, by 30, we'll retire, you know. Yeah. We kind of followed the Stones, though. We kind of looked at them and said, well, wait a minute. The Stones are still killing it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, I feel great. How about you guys? Yeah. I think what it is if you don't like what you're doing, you're going to quit.
Yeah.
You know, I love what I'm doing. I love being up on stage. I love making albums. I love doing new, brand new shows. You know, I'm not trying to shock the audience as much as I'm trying to give them a show that they won't forget. You know,
yeah.
And still, I mean, that's just the way I think. I mean, I'm 75. And if I wanted to be 75, I could, you know, I could wear my pants up to here and, you know, and all that. But if you were to ask me right now, if I just woke up and you said, how old are you? I'd probably say, I don't know, like 35, 40, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's one point that's kind of interesting. You know, when people say rock is dead, Gene Simmons says that from a, you know, from a financial point of view. And yeah, rock is not selling the same kind of albums that it used to sell. But in some ways, that's very good, only because it makes rock and roll outlaw again. All of a sudden, we were at that top of the heap. Now we're outside looking in. And I think for young bands, that's a great attitude to have. Is you know, when we were kids, we were the kids that not invited to the party, you know?
Yeah.
We were the rock and roll kids. Well, I think that's a great attitude for rock and roll young bands to have right now is, hey, we're going to show them. We're going to be louder. We're going to be more rock and everything. So good. I'm kind of glad that we're not at the top of the heap anymore.
Well, brother, man, I am right there on that page with you. I'm right there on that page.
Yeah.
You got a tune on there, White Line Frankenstein, and that's got Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine on there contributing. How did you line that up?
Well, Bob knew Tom pretty well. Okay. And I, you know, of course, he played with the Vampires a couple nights.
All right.
And I, you know, there's certain people you connect with. You just, you know, Tom Morello and I got along like that. It was immediately one of those things where I just went, oh, this guy is powerful. He's a powerful player. And his personality was exactly the kind of person I kind of, you know, go towards. There's some guys that aren't like that. They're very talented, but they just don't have that personality that you mm-hmm. want to be around that guy. Yeah. So Tom is like that. He's a really cool guy. And I love the way he plays. And he just fit on for what we were doing on this kind of album. He just fit perfectly.
So was he in the studio with you, or this was like an overdub that he sent in later?
Well, we went to his house and did some writing. We did writing at his okay. house. So it's one of the songs that evolved, you know, from there. And we just knew that he was exactly right for that song. You know, and there's another song with Kane Roberts where, you know, we just went, oh, Kane's got to play on this. You hear a song and you know exactly who should be on that album, you know, who should be on that song.
Well, you know, after hearing your tune, Big Boots, you know, we talk about stories and stuff. That's a fun, fun one. and then you end with, at yeah. the end, you're like, you know what they say about Big Boots.
And I don't know why that's not on the album, because everybody yelled out Big Socks.
Oh, now I got it.
Bob now I understand. Just put it on. Now and we were all sitting there going, waiting for the punchline, and it never came.
Well, on Road, on the new album Road, you also do a cover on there. You do a version of Magic Bus. So you ever refer to the tour bus as a Magic Bus?
Yeah, we live on the buses. You know, I gave the audience, I mean, I gave the band a choice. Do you want to fly or do you want to take buses? And they always say buses, because the bus becomes your second, you get your hotel, but you're also, that bus becomes part of the tour to you. It becomes a real part of you. And I was thinking, we got to do at least one live song that's a cover. And I always thought Magic Bus by The Who was more written for the radio and didn't really have the big guitars, didn't really have the big, you know, heavy Who thing to it.
Yeah.
And I just said, well, I would like to take that song and you know, really make it rock yeah. rather yeah. than the thing. And we did that in one take.
Oh, excellent. Cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned already about how many days out on the road you're doing this year. I mean, not counting the pandemic time, how many, what's like a normal touring schedule for you?
Well, you know, I'm out, well, in reality, at least 6 months out of the year.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on tour at least 6 months, sometimes seven, you know, and that it never gets old to me, because I've learned how to navigate the road.
All right. How do you navigate it?
Well, you know that the show is going to be, that night you have to be 100%. So what you do during the day is going to make up to if you're going to be 100% or not. So, you know, if I go out and play nine holes of golf with the guys, two of the guys, Roxy and Chuck Garrick, both play. So we'll play nine holes and then we'll go have lunch. And then, you know, you go back to the hotel and have dinner or lunch with your wife and go shopping or something. And then you take a nap and then you do the show and you're 100%. You in the old days, you just drank all day.
Well, you know, you touched on something. You touched on something I think is pretty important there. Mentioned wives. So are people able to travel with their significant others?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, Cheryl's been in the show now for the last 10, 15 years. You know, she plays like three characters in my show.
Mm-hmm.
She does all the high singing in the Vampires.
Yeah.
And so she's like an intricate part of our show now. And So Cheryl and I are always together. We've been married 47 years now.
Wow, congratulations. That's wow.
Thank you. Yeah. In this new show, she plays Marie Antoinette. And you can't think of anybody that should chop your head off better than Marie Antoinette.
Well, speaking about head chopping and shows, your next gig is tomorrow, Saturday the 26th. You're playing with Rob Zombie in Tampa at the Mid-Florida Credit Union Amphitheater.
Yeah.
Have you toured with him before?
Yeah, Rob is like my little brother, you know.
I was going to ask if he's a kindred spirit. So he is a kindred spirit.
Oh, you know, he and I see horror movies as comedies, you know. So every once in a while, we'll go out to a horror movie on a night off. And we'll sit there and watch it and laugh all the way through it and everything like that, you know. And he's a director. So, I mean, he knows how all this stuff is working. And I'm an actor, so I know how it's working. But we're sitting there laughing at you know, all the cliches and what's going to happen next. Okay, that guy's going to fall through the roof, you know, whatever.
Right.
You know, but the craziest thing about Rob Zombie, and I don't think he minds me telling this, he has a dressing room right next to mine.
Uh-huh.
Now, I throw knives. That's how I get ready for a show. I throw knives. I have a target there, and I throw knives at people, everything. And Rob Zombie listens to the worst disco music in the world. And I mean, I'm talking about disco music that just makes you cringe.
Okay.
And I'll open the door, and I'll go, "What are you listening to?" And he goes, "This stuff gets me up for the show."
Wow.
So, you know, I know it's a crazy... Everybody has a different idiosyncrasy about getting ready for the show. And that just happens to be his.
Well, you mentioned being an actor, and I'd forgotten about this, but I am a fan of the Muppet Show, and it's been so long since I've seen it. So I forgot, but you were on the Muppet Show, right?
That was probably the most fun week I ever spent in my life.
Wow.
You know, what happened was they got in touch with me. And at the time I went, I've established myself as sort of the rock's villain in this, and I really don't want to water it down, you know, by doing the Muppets. As much as I love the Muppet Show, I love the show. And I asked them, I said, "Well, who did the show recently?" And they said, "Well, Christopher Lee, Vincent Price." And immediately I said, "I'm in." I said, "I'm in." When you're rehearsing with the Muppets, they become so real to you that you start talking to them like they were real.
Right. So you're addressing your conversation to not to the handler or the puppeteer, but to the doll.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll get done. I'll do I was doing a rehearsal with Miss Piggy. And I said, "You know, it'd be a great idea." And she answers you, you know. And I said, "It'd be great if you put your head on my shoulder." "Oh, that's a great idea." Boom, like this. And then, you know, at the end of the scene, she goes, "What are you doing for lunch?" And I'm going, "I think we're just going to go." And you're talking to the Muppets. And they react like they're real people. And I swear, you get into this whole thing where you really believe that they're real after a while. And that was back when Frank Oz and Henson, all the original guys, you know.
So that was Oz as Miss Piggy and Henson as Kermit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And all the original guys were there. I never had so much fun in my life as doing even the rehearsals. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Vincent Price having been on the Muppet Show shortly before you were, and you had the opportunity to work with him around the time of your debut album as a solo artist, Welcome to My Nightmare. And somehow you got him to narrate the Black Widow. And he's also in this short kind of spooky film that features a track.
Yes.
How did you get Vincent Price involved?
You know, it was so funny. Ezra and I are sitting there. We had written the bit, you know, right before Black Widow. And we said, "Wow, who could we get? What voice could you get that everybody knows?"
Yeah.
You know, and we're talking, well, Bela Lugosi's gone. Boris Karloff is gone.
Right.
We were thinking about getting guys that do imitations of their voice. And then somebody said, Vincent Price. Mm-hmm. And we both looked at each other and went, I wonder if he would do it. We gave him a call. And he said, "When do you want me over there?" And I said, well, what are you doing right now?" And he goes, "I'll be right over."
Oh, wow.
And he comes over and he reads it and he goes, "Can I rewrite some of this?" And I went, "No, you can do anything you want. You know, you're Vincent Price." So not only did he do that, then we did a live version of it in Toronto, one of the first videos ever done. And he was in most of it.
Uh-huh.
Then we're going to do it live on stage. And the very first two shows, he did it live on stage with us. So, I mean, he was like part of the band. Vincent wow. Price was literally part of the band for about a month.
Yeah.
Greatest guy. I mean, classic guy.
Man, that's cool. Were you able to keep in touch afterwards at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we stayed in touch. And, you know, I mean, he was, after that, then Michael Jackson used him on Thriller. And Michael told me, he said that they kind of heard Welcome to My Nightmare and kind of fashioned Thriller after the whole idea of Welcome to My Nightmare. And I said, yeah, I could kind of tell that. I said, I got Vincent Price before you did.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad that came up because that's, you know, I was kind of thinking that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey, man. So this was something that literally, you know, I could put the interview, the questions together. And then it was like last night before I went to bed or whatever, I looked online at Facebook and there was a clip, one of those story things, but it was you and you're talking about Elvis and Elvis handing you a gun. And I had never heard this story before. And I hope you wouldn't mind sharing this about how Elvis had to disarm you at one point.
Oh, it was amazing. You know, I got a call. I was in Vegas in 1972, I think it was. And a call comes in and it says, Elvis wants to meet you. And I went, are you kidding? You know, I mean, that was, I'll be there. So I got to the Hilton Hotel and Chubby Checker was there and Liza Minnelli was there.
Wow.
You know, and we all went up, you know, to Elvis's thing. And, you know, this was not fat, drugged out Elvis. This was Elvis. This is like black leather Elvis.
Oh, man.
You know?
Yeah.
And he was really, I mean, when he walked in the room, when they coined the phrase charisma, you couldn't get more charisma than this guy.
Yeah.
And he's standing there and he goes, hey, man, you're that cat with a snake, right? And I went, yeah. And he says, well, I dig all the makeup, man. That's really cool. And he says, you're from Detroit, aren't you? And I went, yeah. And he said, well, come on in here. I want to show you something. So we go into the kitchen. And he opens up a drawer and hands me a loaded Smith & Wesson 38. You know, and he said, I'm going to show you how to take a gun out of somebody's hand. And so I immediately start taking the bullets out of it. And he goes, no, man, don't worry about that. and so you're standing there and the little devil pops up on your shoulder and says, shoot him. The little angel pops up and says, yeah, shoot him, but don't kill him. By the time the gun was out of my hand, I was on the floor. His boot was in my face. And I went, that's great, Elvis. Okay, that's really good. Now, right after that, he says, you want to see my most prized possession? And I went, yeah. It's just me and Elvis. And we go in the other room. He takes out an envelope full of x-rays. And he says, what happened, man, was I was leaving the theater the other night with my boys. And these three drunk cowboys out in the parking lot want to fight me. So I called my boys up and I fought all three of them. He says, and he shows me the x-ray and he goes, I broke the guy's collarbone right here. He says, and then next ready, and then I broke his ankle right over here. And I'm going, this is your most prized possession.
So wait a minute to make sure I got this straight. So he had somehow acquired the x-rays of the guys that he throttled.
Yes. And it was his prized possession. Then I realized why it was his prized possession. It was his only contact with the outside world.
Oh, wow.
He was not allowed to go out and go to the mall. He couldn't go play pool. He couldn't go to the movies. A fight with these guys was his connection to the outside world.
Right.
And I went, right then I went, I never want to be that big. Yeah. I never want to be so big that I'm a prisoner of it.
Man.
But he was very cool. Very cool guy.
I love the thing about and you alluded to this when you kind of give his accent there, you know, it's about you, the guy with the snake. Oh, that's really cool, man.
Hey, man, you're that cat with a snake, man. He was great.
Well, we're going to take a listen in a moment to the album's opening track, I'm Alice. And you mentioned you open up the shows with that one, too. And again, what's cool is this that third person explanation of itself going on, like, you know, like Bo Diddley talking about Bo Diddley.
Exactly.
Well, what prompted Alice to be reintroducing himself to everybody, explaining himself to everybody.
Well, actually, it was a song that Ryan Roxy brought in. Okay. He was living in Sweden, and he had a couple of friends that were Swedish writers that he was working with. They brought the song in, and it was doing the same thing, but it wasn't saying it correctly, you know? Yeah. And so I went in and redid all the lyrics on it and realized that every character on this album is exaggerated. A white line Frankenstein, you know,
yeah.
He's a guy that goes from my tour to the next tour to the next tour. And I don't think he ever leaves that bus, or he never leaves that truck. So he becomes the Frankenstein. He becomes like, you know, the Godzilla of that bus, you know? So that was the same thing with Alice. I said, well, let's have Alice introduce himself and have Alice brag about himself. Now, I want the audience to know it's not me bragging about myself. It's Alice bragging about himself.
Right.
Which makes it funny to me.
Very cool. Oh, man, Alice, I have to thank you so much for capping off our Alice Cooper week here with our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you so much for having an Alice Cooper week. That's very, very nice of all of you people up there. Tell Stephen that I totally appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, and in case there's any confusion, here's I'm Alice off the brand new album Road in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Breed created just for your lust with exquisite control, a thing you can trust to satisfy your soul. It takes more than a master make, more than a thrill to complete that task. It takes a special skill, a little bit of this and just a sprinkle of that, with a dagger and a cane and a silk top.
Alice Cooper just now here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage with a taste of the new tune, I'm Alice. You can find it on the new album, Road, which is available now. This is the Mighty Banford, and thanks again to Alice for making this Coolest Conversation so special. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Gem Records has released a series of tribute albums highlighting the songwriting of John Lennon, Brian Wilson, and Pete Townsend. Their latest effort is Gem Records Celebrates Ray Davies. And joining me to tell us all about the project is Kurt Ryle from the Gribweeds. Gribweeds are part of the compilation, and Kurt had a big hand in organizing and putting it together. That's Kurt Ryle on our next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.